four right here.
Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, it's the icon, it's your boy the Tornado, Tony Pennycal.
And that song is dedicated to the now in jail, Brady Bulger. I don't know if you heard the news, Tony, but he was caught in Santa Monica yesterday, California. And he's been
now in jail, who?
Whitey Bulger.
Who's that?
He is a guy that was an FBI informant and a mobster in South Boston.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
And my dad actually investigated him back in the 80s. And he was part of one of, I think, about three or four different big investigations that were close to catching him. But they didn't know that he was an FBI informant at home. So every time they got close enough to try to get an arrest, something would happen, a witness would disappear, or something would interrupt the whole scheme of things, and he would get off. And about 1995, he was finally indicted after the story broke that he was an FBI informant. And he was alerted by his FBI handler, left, and he'd been seen all over the country and over in London. He actually had a bank account in his own name in Ireland, I was told, and just an unbelievable story of how the government protected this guy over the years. And now, finally, because Osama bin Laden got bumped off the number one spot of the FBI's most wanted list, Whitey went up to number one, and they decided to do a campaign to try to find his girlfriend, who is known for going to hair salons and getting her teeth cleaned a lot. She was very obsessive about her appearance. So they put out some commercials this week, and they busted him. And it also has a little bit of a connection to Fight News, because back in the time when Whitey, or the other Whitey, otherwise known as the Bald Father, coincidentally enough, Dana White, when he was in Boston running a boxing gym, got approached by one of Whitey Bulger's thugs. Because what Whitey did was he mastered the rackets in Boston. He just basically was one of those guys who had his hand in everything. And he ran something called the Winter Hill Gang. And he would basically shake people down for rent, we call it, you know, in the mafia circles, protection money, whatever, so that they wouldn't get their shop busted up, or they would extort people that were dealing drugs in the area so that they could deal drugs, even though Whitey himself supposedly never did drugs. He's actually part of a government LSD program. That's how he got out of jail early, when he first got busted for bank robbery. So he told everybody he would never go to jail again after that, and he would never do drugs again. But meanwhile, he was behind the scenes shaking people down for allowing them to do drugs in his neighborhood and to sell drugs and store them and all that. But anyway, the connection to Fight News, Dana White had a boxing gym that he was running, and one of Bulger's thugs came up to him and said, you know, we want $2,500 in rent money for you to, you know, keep this place here. White decided, well, that's like $20,000 to me. I can't deal with that. And he hopped on a plane and ended up back in Vegas. And that's how he got connected to the Fertitta brothers and got wind of the UFC going up for sale. And the rest is history. So I guess Whitey chased Dana White into a gold mine. So he's caught now. He's I think was arraigned a few hours ago. They denied him bail, of course, and he's probably going to have an extradition hearing next to go back to Boston and face all kinds of murder charges and the works. I tried to get my dad an interview with the same folks that interviewed me on Fox News LA, but I guess he's too shy. He doesn't want to do it. So he forwarded them to a couple other reporters. But it's an interesting story. Check it out. I would recommend reading the books about it if you really want to know more. There's a ton of books out there on it. And they keep talking about how The Departed is based on Whitey, but it's really very, very loosely based. And, you know, from somebody who actually lived with a guy who investigated this dude, it definitely doesn't do the real guy justice, that portrayal. I mean, Jack Nicholson is a pretty big figure as far as Hollywood people go. And he just, they took the story and they fictionalized it so much beyond recognition that it really has nothing to do with actual events. And there's actually one scene in the movie that I do give credit to being exactly along the lines of what happened, and that was the scene where Whitey Nicholson goes into the store and he meets a young FBI agent who turns out in the movie to be a state police officer. Because Whitey had friends in the state police and the FBI. He was just like the ultimate criminal. They gave all kinds of power by just connecting into all these authority figures, and so that he was tipped off no matter what happened. But it's an interesting story, and definitely can't wait to hear you know, where he's been, what he's been doing, you know, all his time on the run. But getting to more fight news, the direct fight news, I wanted to mention a couple things that came across the radar this week. They're both related to boxing and Entourage. Well, not both boxing, but both related to the Entourage series on HBO. And it turns out that producer of Entourage, Doug Ellen, is developing a show called The Brick. And they're working with Spike Lee and Mike Tyson. And it all stems from a conversation that Tyson had with the writer-producer of Entourage during the his guest spot on Entourage in 2010. I've known that Tyson was in, obviously, the Hangover movies, but I guess he also had a guest spot on Entourage last year. And Tyson suggested a series based on his own rise to fame in boxing, paralleling the roots of Entourage, which is actually based on Mark Wahlberg. And the character Johnny Drama is obviously Donnie Wahlberg, who was in the New Kids on the Block, and he gets every now and then you'll see him in a spot role on a TV show or a movie. He'll have a cameo appearance or a guest role. So it's pretty cool that they're talking about now tracing the steps back to Tyson's Entourage and doing some sort of deal with that. Also involved with the production are Tyson's wife, Lakia Tyson, and Azeem Spicer. So should be interesting. Another Entourage slant story that I saw this week is the character of E in Kevin Connolly has bought the life rights to the Kimbo Slice story. And somebody actually sat down with Kimbo and went through his whole history from day one. And they're talking about putting together a movie now on Kimbo Slice. So that's kind of interesting. As far as big events, we had a big Strike Force event this past weekend. We had the heavyweight Strike Force. It was pretty cool. Except for the main event, wasn't that exciting. We had Alistair Overeem fighting Fabricio Werdum. And Werdum is most famous for beating up Fedor Emelianenko recently, his last fight. And it caught him in a submission. It was a pretty decent fight there. But this one, Werdum had a strategy that pissed a lot of fans off. He pretty much just kept flopping to the ground and hoping that Overeem would jump on top of him. And that didn't quite work out as planned. Because Overeem was more of a striker. He actually won the K-1 kickboxing Grand Prix. The last one that they had. And it was pretty much expected that he was going to try to keep it as a stand-up battle, and he did. But the other fight on the card was also pretty interesting. Josh Barnett fought Brett Rogers, another guy who had done well against Fedor. And you know, probably if he had a better day, but ended up getting caught with a right hand out of nowhere, and he looked like complete shit against Josh Barnett, who is more of a big history in wrestling, and just took him to the ground and beat on him the whole fight. So now that sets up the finale. We have Josh Barnett versus, I don't have the guy's name right in front of me, but I think it's Karatanov, if I remember correctly. And then Overeem will be facing Antonio Silva. Don't quote me on that. I could have those brackets wrong. Yeah. But it was an interesting fight overall. And it was there wasn't really many exciting brawl type fights on there, but it definitely was pretty interesting. Let me get the full stats on this in a second. We also had Jorge Masvidal beat the ever-living crap out of KG Nunes. It was probably one of the bloodiest fights I've seen in Strikeforce in a long time. KG Nunes is more of a striker, so it was odd to see him get the crap kicked out of him. He has a background in boxing, too, so he got smeared, absolutely smeared in this fight. and just everywhere. He had one of those big heels like Renek had in his fight in his last fight in the UFC. The brother of Alistair Overeem, Valentin Overeem, got wiped out himself in the first round against Chad Grigg. Justin Wilcox beat Jesus Cavalcante by accidental eye poke. You know,
this was that the Mel Howard move?
Yeah, it was pretty bad. They actually showed a picture of his eye after the fact, and you could tell him, it was so red and discolored. It was definitely a situation where you couldn't fault the guy Justin Wilcox for saying he didn't want to go further. Also, Connor Hume decision, Magno Almeida. Nashawn Burrell beat Joe Ray by decision. Isaac Valley Flag beat Brian Melanchon by decision. And Todd Moore, Mike Bronzulis by decision. And let me just get the full bracket news here. Let's make sure I got those names right. If it's even here, I don't know. Did you get to catch any big matches again?
I don't even remember last weekend. Indication on how my life is. Well, Friday night, stayed in, watched some of the fights. Because I had to work on Saturday, so I didn't want to do anything too crazy. You know, watched the ESPN broadcast. And last weekend was, what, June the 18th? Is there any fights in HBO Showtime? I have a feeling there was, but never mind. I missed the fight because I went out for a friend's birthday. That's why I don't remember too much about it. who the hell fought last weekend? I know Jason Lithgow got destroyed. And who the hell was the main event? Rich, if you got boxer, can you pull it up and I'll give you fight recaps? I just can't remember who the hell fought. this is me sounding like a broadcaster here.
Yeah, right. Well, just let me correct.
Well, here's what I was meeting with my boss at work the other day. He's asking me, what I'm doing, what my plans are, and because they're bringing somebody else into the office, they wanted to see people that are, cut my hours back. I'm like, well, no, if I'm here, I want full time hours because I'm never going to get my work done in a part time schedule. So we're just sitting there doing everything. He goes, I know you do other things. He goes, what other things are you doing that could be of interest to you? And I'm like, well, he goes, what about your radio show? I'm like, dude, you got to understand something. I'm like, I do that more as a director. We do this, I like it so much. I said, and I'm hoping one day maybe I have somebody might hear it, somebody might like me, somebody might like my knowledge of the sport, and it could lead to something. And then I'm like, here's all the preparation. I don't remember who beat.
Yeah. Unfortunately, today was so busy for me since I was up so late last night following all this Whitey stuff that I didn't do much research either. I think I misquoted the continuation. The Strikeforce Grand Prix. It's actually Antonio Silva is actually going to be fighting Overeem, and Josh Barnett will be fighting the other winner, which I'm trying to find right now. Let's see. See if we can find it. Eric Thomas, who the guy is. I don't know how I pronounced it. I thought I had it close. Boxrick. The War Master. Let's just find his first name. It's tough here. Sergey Karatonov. Sounds like an appropriate name for a guy whose last name is Karatonov.
Yeah.
Karatonov is 18-4. And Josh Barnett is 30-5. It's a heck of a record. He's fought a lot over in Japan, but still, that's pretty impressive. He's fought a lot of big names. And also, I don't know why they didn't have it on that schedule that I just read, but... I don't know if I read it, but Daniel Cormier beat Jeff Monson, the Snowman. It's his nickname, also on that card. I don't know if I read that. That's one of Barnett's former opponents there. So you wanted to know the results on BoxRec. Let's check those.
Yeah, well, I can tell you what happened in a fight. I know got smoked one round. It's actually kind of shocking a little bit.
Wow, this is only showing back to Tuesday for some reason. Is there a way to skew the results here on BoxRec?
Well, yeah, you would. You just want to put it in 6:18. In fact, speaking of got it right in my Klitschko versus Hay prediction.
There you go. That's coming up shortly, right?
Very exciting. Whatever the tornado writes on, then you need to be excited. Yeah, let me see if I can log on right now. That way I can educate, enlighten, do what I do best. I can tornado-size. Okay, holy shit, here's one for you. I'm looking at last week. I put the date in. And for some reason, it came to a music hall in Toluca, Mexico, and Eric Garduno lost a TKO round 7 to unknown.
Really?
Wow, that's dark.
Okay.
The very dangerous CPA actually won.
I just got up the other one from Mexico here with Jason. It's lost a TKO round 1 against Adrian Broner. Also, Ryan Rhodes lost to Saul Alvarez.
That's the one I was thinking of. Saul Alvarez won a 12-round stoppage.
There's even another Camacho on this card. I don't know if he's related to Macho, but Patricio Camacho lost to Jesus Jimenez by knockout in round 3.
Yeah, Camacho is actually a relatively common Spanish name, so the relation, not too sure. But, yeah, that was the fight that I was discussing. It was the Saul Alvarez fight. Stopped Ryan Rhodes, knocked him down a few times. And the one, it was Adrian Broner that stopped Jason Lithgow. Like I said, it's kind of shocking because in his last fight, Broner kind of got schooled, and I didn't even think he won. So, but came back and absolutely destroyed him. Let's see if there's any good fights that were in the States. Deontay Wilder had a second-round knockout over Damon Reed. Deontay, former Olympian, really got to start picking up his competition level. And in Pico Rivera, California, there was a draw in a female fight between Ava Knight and Kalisha West. Ever hear of her?
Oh, yeah. I see that.
Yeah, of course. One of our favorites.
I'm going to go to the next fight whenever she comes to Vegas.
Yeah, you should, man. Let's see if there's anything else. Oh, wow, we had a couple fights in North Carolina. But there was one fight that gave a result. Joshua Tooth knockout one over Adrian Hill. And the rest of the other fights, including Zahir Rahim, a 96 Olympian, were all TBAs. No results posted. I don't know what the hell was going on there. But other than that, looking at last week, there really, really wasn't much on Saturday night. Well, not much at all. Kind of a weekend for boxing. And let me just recap the ESPN card, and let me just pull that up very quickly. And then I'll tell you what I remember. Where the hell is it? Oh, yeah, yeah. Kareem Mayfield, congrats. Very, very faded Steve Forbes, former contender. And he, former El Salvadoria fan, former world champion, was beaten up and down by Kareem Mayfield, stopped in the 10th round. And then in an upset, Grady Brewer, 40 years old, took the undefeated record away from Fernando Guerrero. Grady Brewer, who was 27 and 12 coming in, 40 years old, looked like he had been, past his prime. But he came back and he knocked out Fernando Guerrero, who was 21-0, and took his undefeated record. Fourth round knockout.
He's back.
Yeah.
40 years old. Was he the new Randy Couture of Nice. Well, we're going to have Ryan Ford on here in a few minutes, known as the Real Deal.
Randy Holyfield?
Yeah, right. I don't know. We'll have to ask him if he stole that nickname from him. He started back in 2007, so I guess he would have been well after Holyfield was using that nickname.
Yeah.
And it depends on, obviously, when he adopted it. If he had an amateur career as well, it wouldn't be listed on here. His record is 16-3, and he's lost twice to the same person, so he's only actually been beat by two people in his whole career. Douglas Lima is one of them. That was his last loss at Maximum Fighting Championships 26 Retribution back in September of 2010. And he had two losses to Pat Healy, one at MFC 20 in February of 2009, and the other one in at MFC 17 Hostile Takeover in July of 2008. So, should be an interesting interview. He actually just had a couple wins this year. Actually, he's had three wins this year, dating back to March 11th when he beat Johnny Davis by TKO. And Carol Parisian from the UFC by TKO back in May 19th, 2011. And then his last fight was just this past June 10th here. It's a fight called AMMA 7 Confrontation. And he beat Nick Hinchcliffe by TKO in that fight. So we're going to get him on in a couple minutes here. We also had a big news story this week as far as mixed martial arts in New York. Not going to happen. They decided not to vote on it at all. There was a lot of different political footballs being thrown around in the assembly there in New York. And that just didn't appeal to them. First of all, I think the biggest mistake the UFC made was to make it all about money and how much revenue it was going to bring to the state, because they're facing like over $1 billion shortfall there, and the UFC is throwing around numbers like $23 million that it could generate in a year. So, you know, when you're dealing with those big numbers, that's not even going to be a drop in the bucket. And obviously Dana White didn't help with his comments about union idiots. You know, it would have been one thing to just outright blame the culinary union, which he's been trying to do, but to just generally say union idiots, just it did not appeal to a lot of these politicians in New York, who a lot of them, obviously being Democrats, would have supporters who are unions. And
that's the idiocy of this human being. You know, it's like you want to bash things. And like I said, the one that I always go back to was when I was laid off a couple of years ago, and I had a chance to be on some of those conference calls with you and some of those recorded conferences that we have. And I just remember they were getting ready for the Mayweather-Marquez fight. And he's doing the same. He had a fight card the same night. And he said, I'm putting on seven great fights. You get the main one fight, you get one. One fight is going to be a dud. He's going to be dancing. That's all he's going to do. He's going to be like, he's going to dance with the stars. Don't waste your money. Order my card. You're going to get seven great fights. Now, the Mayweather-Marquez fight wasn't great. The undercard was very good. There was two fights in the undercard, which Dana didn't even mention that there was going to be two boxing undercard fights. And his fight, his card absolutely sucked. And here's the thing. Like, you get an MMA card, you might get seven fights on there. And, you know, Rich, I mean, you know I'm more of a boxing guy. So I appreciate one more than the other. I'm not a straight down the line. So I'm going to be a little biased here. I've watched entire boxing cards that were, you know, not exciting. And then at the same time, I've seen, like, one fight out of a card that was not exciting or one fight steals the show. Either way. But with his, like, if you have fights that end early and they're like, wow, it was like, it's like eating a fast food meal to me. Yeah, it might taste great going down, but then after it's done, you had empty calories inside. When, see, I see a good boxing match almost like a flaming dinner. Okay, I know the bias here. But he made himself look like an ass, trashing the one card, trying to build up his. And his drew a less amount of buys than the Mayweather-Marquez fight did. And overall, the Mayweather-Marquez card overall was a better, more entertaining card. I don't know. That's just my opinion in life.
Yeah, Dana didn't make many fans over the years. Trash in boxing, I don't think. Especially considering that's what got him his start. Boxer size. He used to be a boxer size instructor in Vegas, I know. But he also apparently at one point ran a gym in South Boston. But the biggest thing I think that goes back to my article there on opposingviews.com about Dana White's top 10 fails. It got a little bit of controversy going. A few people didn't like it, but I looked back at it last night, and actually he hasn't followed through on any one of those things except to, by default, he did finally hire Fedor Emelianenko. But my point in the fails was that he didn't bring him on to expose him earlier. Because my argument wasn't necessarily that Fedor was worthy of coming into the UFC, but if he did come into the UFC, they probably would have put him up against somebody that would have shown that he wasn't as great a fighter as he made himself out to be, and that people thought he was going up to that. But it's interesting stuff. One of the other failings is just that he had that fight that he supposedly arranged with Tito Ortiz, made a big deal out about it, had a whole TV show devoted to it, and ended up basically just having the show and then making it look like Tito backed out. And then Tito, of course, told his side of the story, and his side of the story was there just wasn't, the money setup wasn't right. Money was supposed to go to charity, and it was supposed to be, the TV rights were supposed to be all set up one way, and Dana White ended up just taking the limelight for himself and making Tito look like a wimp, you know. But they actually interviewed the Fertittas at one point during that documentary that Dana White arranged, and they both said, you know, this is a lose-lose for us. So I think they had something to do with putting the quash on that, but you know, would have given Dana White a little bit of a position. Because, I mean, you see him today, and he basically talks trash about every fighter who doesn't perform up to par in the cage. And if he had actually shown that he could fight, and even if it's boxing, just have a boxing match with Tito Ortiz, win or lose, you know, his words would actually carry a little more weight. But he decided to just make it all about himself, as usual.
No comment.
All right, well, we're going to get Ryan Ford on the phone anyway.
You know, here's the thing. Vince McMahon is an egomaniac that runs WWE, but at least as a billionaire, he gets in the ring and lets 300-pound, muscle-bound gorillas smash him over the head with a chair took for the show.
Right. That's a good point. You know, and Cena's pretty much just, there's no record of his boxing background. And there's no record whether he ever fought in amateurs himself or obviously he never fought pro. And, you know, you can be a coach without fighting. And it just has no credibility when he criticizes these guys for not fighting well, when he has no background himself to fall back on. But he gets away with it, you know, and people still like him just because he says it like it is, I guess. Anyways, we're gonna switch gears here and get Ryan Ford. Hello. Ryan. Hello. Ryan, can you hear us? You hang up on us. You hang up on us.
You blame me.
My number always comes up weird, so.
Hey, what's going on? Reach Ryan, Real Deal Ford with G.Dub Clovin. Sorry, I'm not available to take your call right now, but if you leave your name and number, I'll make sure to get back to you as soon as possible. Thanks. Have a great day.
To leave a callback number, press 5.
Hey, Ryan, it's Rich from Fighters Unlimited. We're supposed to have an interview. I'm going to try you back in a couple minutes here. Hopefully, we'll get you on. Looking forward to it. So, I guess we're going to have to switch gears again and go to the upcoming boxing matches here I got in front of me. We do have a UFC live event coming up this weekend on Sunday, for once. But we're going to talk about that a little bit later, because that's what our guest is coming on to talk about in the second hour. But, let's see, for boxing coming up this weekend, we're obviously going to have something big to talk about, if I can find it here.
Well, actually, and I'm pissed off about this, there's a great card in Philadelphia I would love to attend, but oh no, I have a graduation party to go to.
Oh, lucky you.
Oh, yeah, lucky me. Why don't you just shoot me in the head? Mike Jones, top 5 ranked out of all organizations, welterweight contender out of Philadelphia, fought on a couple of Manny Pacquiao undercards. He fought on ESPN a few months ago, or fought on HBO, I should say, a few months ago. He's, you know, doing great. He's undefeated. He's fighting in Philadelphia at the South Philly Arena against Raul Munoz. Ought to be a great fight. I wish I could go. Unfortunately, I'll have to be following it to some friends of mine texting me updates. The other fight I was really interested in seeing on there is Kasim Wilson against Philip McCants. Philip McCants is coming off a loss in his last fight against a former Olympian and former title challenger Terrence Coffin. Kasim, this is going to get slowed up and shut down. Kasim is 12-2 with 4 knockouts. Philip McCants is 8-2 with 3 knockouts. Lost the decision to Terrence Coffin in his last fight. And I remember Phil when he was first starting out as a 16-year-old kid, because I was sparring with him at the time and just helping train him. And he's a good kid, he's a good guy, and you know, he's a guy you want to see do well. And I'm looking at one other thing on the card here. I want to make sure it's the right guy. I don't think it is. God, my computer's so freaking slow. Yeah, Mike Machine Gun Oliver is going to be on the card. As we were talking about Iceman a few weeks ago, Machine Gun is getting ready for a title fight against Orlando Salido in July. He's taking a tune-up fight against Felipe Almanzada, who's 15-24. So this is a rematch for Machine Gun to keep busy. You know, that's okay, but get ready to short that window.
Well, I got the mismatch of the week for sure here. Tomorrow night, we have a sixth rounder from Cheboksary, Russia, between Alexei Sololiev, who's 17-0 with 11 knockouts, fighting Ibrahim Labaran, who's 0-1. Quite the mismatch. Not as bad as Mike Oliver's. I mean, Mike Oliver's is not as bad as that. So, and it's still a tune-up record that he's going against, but... Man, this guy's going to pull up the upset of the month here if he beats Sololiev in Russia.
Yeah, I see another one of your boys is fighting Jimmy Lang. He's fighting down on LaGrange, Georgia, against a very dangerous TBA in a 10-hour and 8-round fight. Kevin Kingpin Johnson, fought Vitaly Klitschko and went the distance a few years ago. He's fighting Joseph Harris. That's down in Decatur, Georgia. And there was, I believe it's on HBO. We have a couple interesting fights on HBO. What we have, and I don't know which fight they're going to televise, we have Tavoris Cloud defending his light heavyweight title against Philadelphia's Yusef Mack, who he won that fight eliminator just a few months ago over Otis Griffin to win the shot of the title. We have a rematch, a title fight between Cornelius Canine Bundridge and Taku Powell. The previous meeting resulted in the first punches of the fight, both guys getting knocked down, and then them both getting up and Powell putting Bundridge down for the 10 count. Now Bundridge has the title, and Powell's going to be going for it. And then we have Devin Alexander, fresh off his loss back in January to Timothy Bradley, fighting Lucas Martin Matisse, who is a power puncher, not much in style, but he's a guy with 28 wins, one loss, and 26 knockouts. His only loss is a split decision to Zab Judah, that everybody, because Judah's immediate family, thought Matisse won.
Friday night, the Golden Boys got a show on Telefutura from Frisco, Texas, with an interesting main event. James Kirkland, 27-1 with 24 knockouts, is facing Dennis Sharp, who's 17-7 with 4 knockouts. That was worth. We got a Jesus fight of the week from Miami tomorrow. Also on Telemundo, the other Spanish station. Jesus Pabon, 17-1, with 11 knockouts, fighting Javier Castro, 24-4, with 19 knockouts. And a light heavyweight match, that's for the WBO Latino light welterweight title, by the way. Light heavyweight match between Sullivan Barrera, 7-0, and Frank Paynes, 11-1, with 10 knockouts. For the vacant WBO Latino light heavyweight title and the vacant WBA Fedelatin light heavyweight title. And a pretty big card wrapped around a couple TBAs here and there. Some decent fights, though. Did you cover the ESPN 2 fights here tomorrow night? John Molina at lightweight is going to be the main event, fighting Robert Frankel. Molina is 22-1 with 18 knockouts. Frankel's 28-10 with 5 knockouts, 1 draw. And for the IBF. Light welterweight fight between Mauricio Herrera, 17-1, and Mike Dallas Jr., also 17-1. Both have 7 knockouts. Mike Dallas Jr. has 1 draw, though. It's the difference in their records. They're fighting for the IBF North America light welterweight title. It's the co-main event. It should be pretty interesting. Let's try our boy here one more time. See if we get Ryan Ford. And then we'll, if we don't get him, we'll finish out that list there.
Retrying the Real Deal Ford with G-Dub Cloven. Sorry, I'm not available to book your call right now, but if you leave your name and number, I'll make sure to get back to you as soon as possible. Thanks. Have a great day.
To leave a callback number, press 5.
Hey, Ryan, it's Rich again from Fight News Unlimited. We're still trying to get you on the show. We're live here on the show trying to get the interview going here. You can actually call in to us when you're ready, if you get this. The number is 347-324-3228, and we'll see you on there if you tap into the call, and we'll be able to connect you. So whenever you're ready, we're on for another about an hour and 15 minutes here. So if you can get on, good time, we'll still be able to do the interview. So give us a shout, and we'll try to connect and get this done. Thanks. Bye. So there we go. That's the way it goes in this business. You gotta roll with the punches. Let's see if he comes on later. Let's see. We got another fight Friday worth talking about here. It's gonna be on GoFightLive.tv or no, GoFight.com. This thing says. I've never heard of that. Mega TV Time Warner. From El Paso, Texas, heavyweight David Rodriguez, 34-0 with 32 knockouts, fighting Owen Beck, who's 29-7 with 20 knockouts. And this probably should be for a bigger title, but it's for the vacant WBC VCOM box heavyweight title. We also have super middleweights David Medina, 22-2 with 10 knockouts, fighting Juan Astorga, 15-6 with 10 knockouts and one draw. And some window dressing fights there too, of course. Another fight on Friday from the Cordon Bleu Woodhaven in New York. Eileen Olszewski is headlining the female fight there, headlining against Melissa McMorro. Olszewski is 7-2 with 2 draws, no knockouts. McMorro is 4-2 with 3 draws, no knockouts. And it's for the vacant USA New York State female super flyweight title. And also on that card, I actually interviewed Eileen a while back, way back when I first started, and it's kind of funny. There's also another guy I interviewed on the card back in the day. Welterweight Tommy Rayone, who's 14-4 now, with 4 knockouts, fighting Norman Allen, who's 6-4 with 3 knockouts. And there's a couple 8-rounders of TBA against Juan Dominguez, who's 7-0 at bantamweight for the vacant USA New York State bantamweight title. And lightweights Jonathan Cuba, 5-3 with 4 knockouts, fighting Ariel Duran, who's 7-2. 4 knockouts. That's for the vacant USA New York State lightweight title. A lot of titles. What else? That's not really popping. Did you mention the Felix Stern fight yet?
I did not.
Okay, we got Felix Stern fighting in Germany. Felix Sturm is 35-2 with 15 knockouts at middleweight. He's fighting a 12-rounder against Matthew Macklin, who's 28-2 with 19 knockouts for the WBA Super World Middleweight title. Also on the card, heavyweight Manuel Char, 17-0 with 9 knockouts, fighting Danny Williams, 43-9 with 33 knockouts. Pretty good matchup there. These big heavyweight fights are all overseas now. Danny Williams actually has won his last two fights, both in 2011, since losing back-to-back fights against Derek Chisora in May of 2010. Before that, Carl Baker in October 2009. But his last two fights are against guys with not too stellar records. One guy was 2-21 in March. He fought Franklin Carey Roth, 2-21 with two draws, and he of course knocked him out in the second round. Then he had a fight in Hamburg, Germany against Laszlo Toth, who's 9-2. That was in April of 2011. So this is a big step up, finding a guy who's 17-0. Danny Williams is not as formidable as he used to be, it looks like. His last win against somebody with an impressive record was in May of 2009, when he beat John McDermott, who was 25-4, by split decision. And that was a rematch. He beat Mike Tyson back in 2004.
Yeah.
Danny Williams.
Yeah, do you remember the circumstances of that fight?
Not offhand.
What was it? A fourth round knockout, wasn't it?
I'll be joking. Clinton Bomber, Danny Williams, United Kingdom. It was a fourth round knockout.
Yeah. Tyson kicked the crap out of him in the first like two rounds and blew his knee out, landing an uppercut. He was fighting on one leg till he just ran out of gas, and when he went down, he just sat there and just decided not to get up.
So Williams took that to a fight with Vladimir Klitschko and got knocked down something like, I don't know how many times in eight rounds. It was like six times or something like that. But every other round he was on the ground.
Not good. Let's see what we got on hand for Saturday. Featherweight fight from Dublin, Ireland. It's pretty interesting here. Patrick Hyland is 22-0 with 10 knockouts, fighting Philippe Frenois, who's 14-3 with one draw. And that's for the vacant WBF featherweight title. Somebody's O's got to go in Italy on Saturday between Danielle Petrucci, 28-0, 10 knockouts, and Leonard Bundu, 24-0, with 7 knockouts, 1 draw. Both of them had 1 draw. That's for the vacant EBU welterweight title. And there's another Daniel. Maruzzi, 7-0, at middleweight on that card, fighting Massimiliano Bucceri, 8-1, with 1 draw. There's another mismatch of the week from another town in Italy on Saturday. Alberto Cervidae, 30-0 with 7 knockouts, 2 draws, fighting Alexei Shorokov, 5-6. It's rough. And it's the co-main event here in Mexico on Saturday. Somebody's always got to go. We got Antonio Lozado Jr., 23-0 with 20 knockouts at light welterweight, fighting a 12-rounder against Roberto Ortiz, 19-0 with 17 knockouts. So that should be a good fight. Get good knockout percentages and undefeated. Ortiz does have one. And the main event is a bantamweight fight between Michelle Garcia, 22-4 with 21 knockouts. I don't know if you pronounce that Mikel. It's definitely a guy. But Gerardo Marin Hernandez is his opponent. He's 8-1 with 8 knockouts and 1 draw. That's for the vacant WBC Continental America's Bantamweight title. And another interesting fight on that card is actually the whole card is interesting. There's 3 more good fights. Lightweight 12-rounder between Humberto Soto, 55-7. 2 draws, 32 knockouts, and Motoki Sasaki, 36-8 with 23 knockouts, 1 draw, and that's actually for the WBC lightweight title. And I don't know why that's not the fight that gets top billing. It's the guys with the most fights and the biggest title on the line. It's listed as third. The Ortiz-Lozado Jr. fight is actually for the WBC silver light welterweight title. I don't know if I mentioned that. And then we have a minimum weight fight and a super flyweight fight. The minimum weight fight is Carlos Velarde, 19-1 with 11 knockouts, 1 draw, and Julio Cesar Felix, 15-3 with 6 knockouts. And we got Julio Cesar, 14-0 with 13 knockouts, and Cesar Javier Gandara, 14-1 with 5 knockouts, super flyweight. Another Mexico fight worth mentioning here. A couple decent fights here. 3 of them actually leading this card. Victor Tarazov at super bantamweight, fighting a 12-rounder. He's 29-2 with 16 knockouts, 1 draw, fighting Feider Veloria, F-E-I-D-E-R, Veloria. That's a record of 24-8, 16 knockouts, 1 draw for the interim NABA Super Bantamweight title in that fight. And we got Super Flyweight Jose Salgado, 24-1 with 21 knockouts, and Iber Bursino, 33-6 with 26 knockouts, 1 draw. That's for the NABF and NABA Super Flyweight titles. And third on the list there is a 10-round light welterweight fight between Pablo Cesar Cano and Pablo Lugo. Cano is 21-0 with 16 knockouts. Lugo is 20-4 with 16 knockouts. And yet another fight from Mexico. This is like Mexico Fight Week. We have Fernando Montiel, 44-3 with 34 knockouts, 2 draws, and Neomar Cermeno, 20-3 with 12 knockouts. No title on the line. We probably covered all the other big fights in boxing. Let me just go through the list. It's the last part. We have fights from the United Kingdom between Lovemore Nadeau and Kell Brook for the vacant WBA Intercontinental Welterweight title on Saturday. It's going to be on Sky TV. Brook is 23-0 with 16 knockouts, and Nadeau is 48-12 with 31 knockouts, 2 draws. Also, we got an 8-rounder heavyweight fight. Richard Towers, 10-0 with 8 knockouts, and Ismael Abdul, who's 40-21 with 16 knockouts, 2 draws. No title on the line there. We already talked about the Mike Jones card in Philly, of course. Sorry, mention Tavoris Cloud versus Yusuf Mack?
Yes, I did. I think that Mack got that shot by beating Otis Triple C Griffin, you know, to become a mandatory challenger for the undefeated Tavoris Cloud. It's going to be a tall order for Yusuf. I've met the guy. I know guys that he's trained with. I know his trainers. It's going to be a tall order for Yusuf. Let's be totally honest. Tavoris Cloud is a bad dude.
All right. There's a lot of great fighters on that card. This is probably HBO's best put together card in a long time, I think. They have just a ton of different people. And by the way, that Philadelphia fight, it says it's going to be on Fox, so I'd at least get to watch it.
Are you kidding me? That's because it pisses me off even more. You know what pisses me off even more?
What?
Because I get on TV.
The HBO card has Devin Alexander versus Lucan Martin Matisse. I think you mentioned that one.
Mm-hmm.
Cornelius Bundridge versus Sessue Powell.
Mm-hmm.
F light middleweight title. Corey Spinks. 37.
I didn't even, thankfully, I didn't see that name on there. I probably would have bugged my head in the sand. He hasn't gone away yet.
He's fighting Shakir Ashanti. He's 16-10 with 4 knockouts.
I'm sure that'll be a thrilling fight.
And it's kind of interesting his name's popped up there because, you know, out here in Vegas, there's a place called Gold and Silver Pawn, which is the basis for the Pawn Stars show on the History Channel. And I saw on one of the commercial segments there, they had Rick, the owner of the shop there, posing with a belt, and it was Corey Spinks' belt. Somebody pulled, I don't know if it was Corey himself, but somebody sold his belt to the pawn shop, and that's one of his prized possessions. He said it's not for sale. So that actually gave me the idea to contact those guys through their publicists and see if there's a possibility of getting a tour and looking at some of their other boxing memorabilia. So I've seen a few things that people bring in, like tickets to fights and stuff like that, that they still kept. And it'd be interesting to do a story on that or a YouTube video focusing on all the stuff that was sold to them that ties to combat sports. You know. But I haven't heard back yet. So we'll see if we can get that. Might take a while. But what else? That covers the big schedule for mixed martial arts. I guess we could just give our guy one last chance.
Right. What's the surprise you have on for me tonight?
What?
You said you had a surprise for me tonight.
Yes, it wouldn't be a surprise if I tell you who it is. We'll find out in about a half an hour if we can't get Ryan on.
Hello?
Hey, Ryan.
Yo.
Hey, how's it going? This is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron, Fight News Unlimited.
Hey, what's happening? I think that was you that was trying to get a hold of me earlier because my phone was, the reception was bad.
Yeah, that was us.
Okay.
In an interview we're supposed to do. We're also on the line with Tony the Tornado.
No. What's up?
What up, what up?
So how's it going? I just we were going over your record a little bit earlier. We saw you beat Caro Parisian and Hinchcliffe there. You got anything on the horizon for a fight coming up?
I'm just actually just waiting here. September 16th is the next card here in Edmonton, and they're wanting it to be a title fight, so it could be a big name who's outside the UFC.
Cool. And what would you say was your toughest opponent so far?
My toughest opponent in my whole career?
Yeah.
I'd have to say Pat Healy.
Yeah, the guy that had two losses that you had.
Yep.
Him, so yeah, I guess that would have to be the toughest guy. What was
yeah,
that?
Yeah, that was earlier in my career.
What was so tricky about him?
I don't know. You know, I think it was just I was really really green still at the game. You know, didn't really know, you know, as much. And then, I don't know. I guess he just had my number though two nights.
And what's the secret to your good record? You got a 16-3 record. What's allowed you to get so many wins and compete so well in the sport?
You know, I trained hard. You know, want to thank God for you know giving me you know these abilities to you know do what I've been doing. Got to train with you know a lot of good people. You know, people have invited me out to you know come train with them, and you know I just keep the grind on in the gym every day, and you know that's what makes me the fighter that I am today. Plus, it's in my blood.
You have some family that fought too.
Pardon me.
So you have some family background in the fighting sports, sir?
Oh yeah, yeah. My dad used to be the Canadian lightweight champ, ranked 3 in the world, boxing.
Oh, cool.
My dad fought like Ray Mancini, Michael Lodgety, Ken Buchanan, Percy Hales, all those guys.
What's your father's name?
Al Ford.
I'm trying to remember if I've because I followed a lot of a lot of boom boom fights. You know, I watched. I was obviously young when he was in his prime, but I'd watched some of them on videotapes and YouTube. So I was just trying to remember to see if I had actually seen that fight. I'll have to check it out to see if
I
remember it.
I think the fight that he fought, my dad went 10 rounds with him, and that next fight, Mancini won the world title.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, so it's in my blood, and I love to fight.
Yeah, Tony was actually asking earlier about your nickname, The Real Deal. He was wondering if you got it from Holyfield.
No, from Evander. No, I got it from just, you know, people around me and stuff just saying you're the real deal, you know, because they see how hard I work with them and, you know, whatever I want to do and get accomplished, you know, I get it done. So that's why I got named The Real Deal.
So I imagine with a dad who was a boxer, you must have some pretty good striking in your background, right?
Yeah, you know, I do, but, you know, a lot of people haven't been able to see that yet. You know, I was so caught on my wrestling game and, you know, like where my strengths are. I haven't been using, you know, the hands as much as I should, but, you know, I'm going to be a threat everywhere in this MMA game once I get it all.
All right. So did you wrestle in high school, college, or anything?
Yeah, not college. I wrestled junior high school out here as city champ. You know, I lost one wrestling match probably out of, like, 250, maybe 200. That's pretty much it. Just, you know, I play football. I'm just an all-around athlete, and now I'm that mixed martial arts all-around athlete.
Sweet. And what got you into the fighting in the first place?
I always wanted to try fighting. I tried some amateur boxing, and, you know, I just thought that I wanted to do more because I had so much more to give, and, you know, I'm watching the UFC and, you know, watching those guys being able to get in there and, you know, and challenge another guy to a fight and fight. I wanted to do it.
All right. And do you have any fighters out there that you watch a lot and you try to emulate a little bit and adopt their style or anything like that?
No, not really. I watch everybody, you know, and just pick stuff from everybody because, you know, you can pick something from, you know, one guy and do that and it can work. You can pick something from another guy and it's not going to work. So, you know, I just say, you know, just watch everybody and see what everybody's doing.
How about a favorite fighter? Do you have a favorite guy out there that you think is the best in your eyes?
Favorite fighter is... I like all the fighters, but my favorite fighter would be boxing fighter, Tyson.
Oh, Tyson. Wow,
that's my favorite fighter of all time.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Tyson, fun to watch.
Yeah, he actually was the basis for a lot of my lessons when I coached the sport up there at my school, Vermont. And I had the boxing club that I started out of the blue. I used to try to teach people his left hook, the style that he used to throw the left hook, because, of course, it's probably his number one highlight reel punch is the uppercut, but a lot of people he had the amazing left hook to go with it.
Yeah, that uppercut left hook put him down.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting. That's probably the first MMA fighter we've ever asked that question to give us a boxer. And as far as stylistically, do you favor one style over another? Do you have a favorite punch or submission or anything like that?
No, pretty much. I like to get it, you know, wherever it goes. You know, I like wherever it is. If it's, you know, from standing up, if I get the punch in the face, I love doing that. If I get to grapple with you, wrestle you, pick you up, arm you. Like, yeah, I like it all from the ground and pound to, you know, I 8 wins by submission, so I like it all.
Right. Now, you've had a chance to fight a couple UFC veterans in Pete Spratt and Carl Parisian. What's that experience been like to be able to chalk those wins off on your record?
Oh, it's good. With guys who had a lot of experience and guys who had experience in that wins. And just, you know, to put myself, you know, challenge myself and, you know, to really know where I'm at. And, you know, I think I'm up there and I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing, fighting guys, got names, and take them out.
All right. And do you have an exclusive contract with anybody or are you kind of bouncing around now? It's like you fought on 3 different circuits in your last 3 fights. So it's kind of curious.
Yeah, you know, I got a contract back. With the Aggression MMA guys, you know, they're good guys here. You know, they let me fight in other organizations if, you know, if it doesn't conflict with their fight. So, you know, they understand that, you know, this is what I do for a living. So I take this seriously and, you know, I put food and a shelter over my family's head from doing this. So this is what I got to do is fight.
Cool. And you're obviously from Canada. What's it like fighting up there? What's the fight scene like up there?
Oh, man, it's awesome. You know, people out here, wow, Canadian fans are crazy for MMA. You know, they like to fight. And, you know, as you know, like the UFC sold out the biggest show when it was in Toronto, Canada, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, they you know, Canada's got my back every time I step in the ring. So it's all good.
All right. And what do you enjoy most about the sport, participating in, you know, just the watching the sport itself?
What do I like about it?
Yeah, what's the best part for you?
Just, you know, just getting the challenge, you know, getting somebody to weigh in the exact same weight, you know, and then to be able to do the same thing overnight and step in the cage or the ring the next day and just, you know, battle it out and see who's the better fighter.
Right. And what would you say is the most important thing that you do to get ready for a fight?
Train hard. That's what you got to do. You got to be in the gym training, learning, soaking up as much as you can, because if you're not, you're going to get knocked out or hurt.
Right. And do you have an ultimate goal as far as where you want to go in the sport?
Yeah, you know, I'm hoping to go wherever, you know, this world that God takes me on. I'm going to keep fighting. You know, obviously keep winning, putting W's in that column, and, you know, wherever it takes me, you know, I'm hoping to get out to Los Angeles by the end of this year and, you know, get up to Orange County and, you know, get up there and train with, you know, all those high-level guys out there and, you know, just put in the work.
And I'm seeing a lot of pictures here of you on Sherdog fighting in a ring. You obviously probably fought in both a cage and a ring, right?
Yeah.
Which do you prefer, would you say?
The cage. The cage is for MMA.
Yeah, I've always...
You can't get out. You can't. There's no getting out. You can slip through ropes and stuff, right? And the fight's got to be stopped and put back into the middle because of the ropes. You want to fight, step in the cage if you fight in MMA.
Yeah, the only actual fight that I ever went to with a ring that I liked better was they had this circuit in Massachusetts called Reality Fighting. and they had an octagon ring. So there were no corners, really, to get caught in. It was just like you had to fight, and it was a very small ring, too, so that made it interesting.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's the only ring that I would prefer. Seems like you do all right either way, though.
Oh, yeah. Get it in, wherever you got to fight. Eight is better, but, you know, you have to move it out to the parking lot and put a mat on the car to do it.
All right. Now, as far as your regular life, what do you do outside the training and fighting that keeps you busy?
Family, man, just hang with the family. I got a wife and two kids. I just had a little baby boy. He's 5 months old now, and my daughter's 2.5 years old. And, yeah, you know, I just came back from a trip after, you know, fighting those two fights back-to-back. We went out to Mexico, played a Carmen, me and the wife, and we relaxed and, you know, came back, and, you know, now it's family time.
Cool. And obviously you mentioned your father must be a role model. Do you have any other role models that helped you out as you went up the ranks here in the sport?
Yeah, for the fighting, for sure. You know, he's, you know, a lot of people recognize me through him, and then, you know, now I'm doing what I'm doing. You know, I gained a lot of boxing fans out here in Edmonton, if not Canada, you know, to come out and watch MMA.
Cool. And what would you say was your best moment in the sport so far?
My best moment, man, every time I win is the best moment for me.
Answer. Tony, you got any questions?
No, I was going to say, I know that feeling. You know, I'm a very, that's why I think I did well in boxing for so many years. Very competitive person. That's when I train others now, that's the one thing I really stress with them is, you know, it's a sport you got to, you know, train your ass off. And you got to focus when you're in there, whether it's boxing or mixed martial arts. Because, you know, in other sports, you know, you're playing a baseball game, you're playing a football game. You might be playing, you know, a football game, and you might be up, 35-3, and you make a mistake, it's 35-10. Not a big
yeah.
deal. If you have 38, 35, you make a mistake, that could be a problem. But in boxing, I said, you're putting your own ass on the risk. Same thing with mixed martial arts. You could be sitting there and just lose focus for 1 second, and then
you're knocked out
for 5 minutes.
Exactly.
And that's what I enjoy. And that's why I was, when I talk to guys that are in boxing and mixed martial arts, that's the general theme that I see a lot, where the guys say, yeah, they like it because it's a one-on-one, it's ultra-competitive, and there's a big risk to it.
Oh, big time. Got to have that right mind.
Have you ever had a situation where you've been hurt bad in a fight that set you back a while or anything like that?
No, you know, thank God, you know, I was 18 fights, and, you know, I pretty much went into a fight and come out the fight looking the way I did, you know, and I've gone, you know, one full 3-minute fight and 1 5-minute fight, and you know, I've been blessed not to get hit.
Round, you mean, not minute, right?
Rounds, yeah.
Yeah, looking at your record here, you got one. The last loss there to Healy was a 5-rounder. That must have been rough.
Yeah, you know, it was a straight, pretty much straight grappling, wrestling, grinding fight. That one. I kind of played into his game.
And as far as looking forward, is there anybody out there in the league there that you're in now that you really want to fight?
No, you know, like, I just want to fight, you know, the best guys. I want to fight the guys who got names who, you know, people know and, you know, are going to come out and watch the fights and just, you know, watch me put on a show and watch us put on a show and fight. You know, I don't really... I ain't got no beefs with anybody, but, you know, if they feel they can beat me, contact the promotion, set up the fight, and, you know, let's get it on.
All right. And as far as, you know, we talk a lot about the boxing versus MMA debate, and, you know, it's the kind of started when Dana White and Floyd Mayweather were going back and forth talking trash about each other. How do you feel as far as the competition between those two sports? What do you think about that?
I don't really think there's competition between the two sports because they're two totally different sports. Boxing is a totally different sport than mixed martial arts. You know, I fought a pro boxing fight. I come from a boxing background. And, you know, I've done the boxing, and, you know, now my main goal is, my main thing is mixed martial arts. And they're totally two different sports to even compare. So, you know, I like both of them.
So you still watch a lot of boxing today?
Yeah, you know, I watch a lot of boxing. I flip through the channels of the boxing fight, and I watch it. You know, there's not a lot of big fights going on because all those guys, you know, there's so many belts to, you know, to catch up to be watching. But, you know, I'll watch the fights that are big fights.
Yeah, the shame about with boxing now is, you know, everybody, you know, there's so many belts, you're right. You know, there's WBA, WBC, IBF, WBO, then you have WBU, then you have something, you know, WBA, Diamond, Super, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So everybody can almost have a belt. Well, if you have a belt, and I don't want to fight you for whatever reason, I mean, that's not my mentality. My mentality is I want to beat the best to say that I'm the best. I want to be the man who beat the man. But, you have a lot of these other guys, and I don't think it's more the fighters, because I know a fighter's mentality and a fighter's pride. You know, a fighter's pride is going to say, you put him in front of me and let's dance. But a manager and a promoter is more sitting there going, boy, I don't want to put my cash cow in there with a guy like Ryan Ford. He's got a belt, but there's so-and-so over there, and he's got a belt too, and he's an easier fight. Let me fight him. My fighter can get the belt, and we can make money, and that's the whole bottom line, making money. That's what pissed me off. I was joking with Rich the one day on the show. I said, I can imagine what Don King and Bob Arum and Dana White were like as kids. You know, two guys getting a fight in the schoolyard. And say me and Rich were going to fight in the schoolyard, and we had an argument. And they would run up this other little kid. He would be like the Dana White or the Don King. And he'd be like, listen, all right. And he would instigate it. Tony, I heard Rich said this about you. And then I'm getting all pumped up. Hey, Rich, Tony said this about you. Now we're ready to kill each other. And he gets the word up. Tony and Rich are going to fight behind the school at 3 o'clock. Pay me $1 and I'll let you in.
Promotion.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, for real. This is, you know, a lot of people don't understand what's in the back scenes in the MMA game. You know, it's a sport, but it's a business, too.
Absolutely.
Now, what do you think about the growth of MMA over the years? I know I only just started watching it in 2006, but it's obviously been around a lot longer, but it's just sort of exploded in the last 5 or 6 years here.
I think it's good. You know, a lot of people who, you know, Toronto wasn't legalized for mixed martial arts, and they just passed that. And, you know, now there's a lot of people, you know, that are wanting to be fighters, being able to get the chance to fight in, you know, these different organizations and get experience and get guys from all over so that, you know, and make money too.
Right. And what was that like being in an area where it wasn't approved? Did you have to fight elsewhere a lot, or did they actually have fights, but they just regulated?
Yeah, they actually, out in Toronto, see, I'm in Edmonton, they're in Toronto, so they're the biggest city in Canada. And they had to, their fighters had to fly out to, like, say, come to Edmonton to fight, or they'd have them on, like, the reserves, the native reserves. They'd be able to throw fights out there, but, you know, that big of a city, they can sell out shows no problem now.
Mm-hmm. And were there a lot of people that were kind of up in arms about that when they couldn't fight?
Oh, yeah, they just were waiting, you know. Everybody was just waiting for it to pass. It'll pass, right? You know, there's nothing different than, you know, fighting mixed martial arts and playing NFL football.
Right, actually, I can remember being in wrestling in high school and the coach telling us the statistics of injuries from wrestling were a lot lower than that of football. And a lot of kids were just like, what? You know, they couldn't believe it.
Oh, yeah.
Supposedly it's so physical, but you know, it comes back to the way you work out too. A lot of these guys, and if they take it seriously, they're training so hard so that they can prevent injuries in a lot of cases. You know, if you know how to avoid getting your arm snapped or your Achilles ripped in a submission hold, then it's not going to happen to you.
Yeah, exactly.
And the only study I ever saw that showed that MMA was worse than boxing in any category was one that was, I think, back in 2003 or a little bit later, that showed that per capita there were more concussions in MMA because of the elbows and knees. But same thing, it turned out there were more lasting injuries from, like, pugilistic dementia because there's such an emphasis on getting hit in the head.
Yeah, it's nature comes with sports.
The other one that I was mentioning about boxing, and obviously I'm a boxing fan, you might have to see lasting injuries in sport boxing because of the padding of the gloves. And people think, well, what are you talking about? Well, when you have the very smaller gloves in MMA, you're more likely to see, you know, a fighter get jolted and knocked out quickly. For the boxing match, you know, here is and part of the reason I like boxing. You have bigger gloves, the guy can get stunned, he can clinch, he can hold on, you know, and survive and then take additional punishment. And one of the things I've always loved about boxing was the ability for a fighter that has been knocked down to potentially get back up and rally. A lot of times in an MMA fight, a guy can get knocked down and he's pounced on so quickly, it's over because he's stunned. So he might get hit one or two more good shots. That's it. Say in a boxing match, you know, fighter A gets hit a hard shot and he goes down about 30 seconds to go in the round. He gets back up. He wipes his gloves off. The referee looks at him, lets him continue. He's stunned. He takes two or three more shots. He holds on. He makes it to the end of the round. Sits in a stool. They put the ice bucket on his neck, you know, and they revive him. He goes back out there. He takes more shots. He might go down again later. He might take a beating over three or four rounds before he gets stopped. There could be, instead of two punches with a four-ounce glove over a stunned guy, it could be maybe 60 or 70 punches with a 10-ounce glove over a guy that's still concussed in the brain.
Yeah, for sure.
I just ripped my own sport. See what I did?
Yeah, at some point when I first started watching it, I came up with the question of, you know, would a standing eight count be a good idea for MMA? And I think I asked Ken Shamrock when we had him on. And we had actually a little serious about the MMA versus boxing debate, and he shot it down right away. So, made a lot of good points. It all depends on what you do. You know, sometimes you have a guy who stops it too early, and, you know, it's obvious, but other times it's a debatable issue whether it gets stopped at the right time.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I guess the basic rule is just don't get knocked down.
Don't get knocked down. Keep your hands up.
Yep. Well, Ryan, we've had you on about a half an hour here. Just want to give you a chance to say thank you to anybody, give a shout out, say hello to anybody out there. Final thoughts, anything you want to shoot out there before we go?
Yeah, I want to thank all my sponsors, Tap Out, Q, Kia West Edmonton, Head Rush, Iridium Sports Agency, and G-Dub Clothing, you know, for helping me get to where I am today. I want to thank you to all my family, all my friends, all my supporters, and thank the haters too, because, you know, haters are my motivators, so you pay them.
Well, it's been great talking to you. It's good to get somebody on who has a little bit of ability to discuss both boxing and MMA. It's been a while since we had somebody like that, so.
Oh, yeah, all good. No problem. Thanks for having me.
And we'll definitely keep an eye on you and keep watching you, and we'll definitely wish you the best of luck moving on down the road and look forward to great things.
Perfect. Thanks a lot, and yeah, I'll make sure I put on the next show.
All right. Have a good one.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
You too.
All right. All right, so that was Ryan Ford there, the real deal. And we get a lot of press releases from the guy who hooked us up with that interview. So whenever there's a fight coming up for him, we'll hear about it, and it'll be on the blog. So check out the blog for any updates on him, and you'll see it. And we also, like we said earlier, we have a special surprise guest. And I'm not even going to say who it is. We're just going to call, and we're going to see if you can identify who it is.
Okay.
You should know. You think you got to get... Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey.
Hi. How's it going? Uh oh.
I'm kidding. It's going good, but I'm getting myself back in that ear.
Oh, you're getting a little echo. Yeah, we have that problem from time to time. That's just because you're on speakerphone.
No.
You're not. I can't hear anything.
Oh, you can't hear? Uh-oh.
Well, I hear a lot of echoing.
Yeah, me too.
Echoing. Yeah.
I recognize his voice.
Is that any better?
Nope, I don't hear myself anymore, so that's good.
All right.
That's a good thing.
So,
what?
So, where have you been, Holly? It's been a while.
It has been a while. It has been. I was in Germany.
Holly, I'm still better looking than Rich.
Are we on the air?
Yes, we are.
Of course we're on the air.
Fabulous.
Live on the air. And working on, of course, to give us a little bit of an idea of what to expect for this Sunday's UFC event, but also just wanted to let people know that you're going to be coming on next week, too, and you're going to arrange all our guests and take that whole thing off our hands, and you're going to come back to the fold at Fight News Unlimited, right?
I am. It's true. It's true. I've missed you guys.
Yeah, it's been such a long time. I actually checked when you gave us the story about Ryan Couture.
Mm-hmm.
I checked back in the archives. I got to say,
2008. 2009, right? Oh, that's right. It was the UFC in Germany.
Yeah, 2009. Yep. I think August of 2009 was your last article. Mm-hmm. That you published on our site. So,
yeah,
it's been 2 long years.
It has. But I'm back. I wanted to tell you something because I was looking at my history also, and my first article that I wrote for you that was picking winners, and you know I love to pick winners.
Mm-hmm.
I picked every single winner correctly except for Groh versus Cote. It was for UFC 74.
Wow.
That's how long ago I started writing for you. 2007, I think.
Yeah, I don't even think I started watching until like UFC 70. I don't order any pay-per-views because I get them all for free on my computer.
Well, yeah, because you have your in with the Fertitas now, so.
That's funny. So, tell us a little bit about where you've been, what you've been up to.
I was in Germany for a while. I was working. I was actually contracted with a motorcycle magazine in Germany called Motorrad. I wasn't writing about motorcycles because I don't know crap about motorcycles. But I was contracting with them because they were contracted with the Army to teach soldiers and the Army civilians how to ride motorcycles and drive on the Autobahn in such a way that they wouldn't have to pick them up with kitty litter and a shot back. So that's what I was doing. And now I'm in Colorado.
Interesting.
Yeah. I thought it was.
And you did a little preview on this UFC Live 4. It's coming up this Sunday, right?
I did.
And it's in Tony's favorite town of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I love Pittsburgh.
But you know, UFC is not the only thing coming up. The Strike Force coming up Friday, tomorrow.
Right. That too.
Yeah, and that's where that whole Ryan Couture thing came, because quite frankly, that's really the only fight that matters tomorrow night.
Yeah, Ryan's a kid. I got to meet him out here in Vegas, and definitely pulling for him. He looks like this is going to be one of his toughest opponents yet, though.
Yeah, he's a little guy compared to his dad. I mean, his dad's not huge, but, I mean, he was able to get up to heavyweight. He's a little 155-er.
Yeah, he's definitely getting into it a little bit earlier than his dad did, though.
Well, that's true. That's true.
He started fighting
Well, he'll be able to be an actor a lot sooner, too, so, you know.
maybe. I always thought...
Since he
acquired Strikeforce, I always thought that the father would stick around a lot longer. And since Dana was talking about mixing breeds, so to speak, there, I thought that he would stick around and try to get a shot on Fedor and Strikeforce, and then fight on the same card as his son.
That would be good. And he might come back for that. I mean, he's come back before after retiring, so you never know. He might come back for special occasions. But, you know, he's older. I mean, he's almost 50 years old now. And Fedor, I would have to say Fedor's light is starting to fade, you know, because he lost to Verdum, who he shouldn't have lost to. Verdum just outsmarted him, basically. And then ended up losing in a colossally horrible fashion to Alistair Overeem. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know if that wasn't a good loss.
No. Bigfoot Silva beat him. Am I wrong?
I didn't quite understand what you said.
I thought it was Antonio Silva that beat Fedor. Was that somebody else?
I thought it was Verdum. Oh, well, anyway. I thought it was Verdum, but maybe not.
No, Verdum.
He did. He was pulling all of the little stunts that he was trying to do last Friday, where he was playing like he was hurt and then drawing him in, and that's how he beat him. But if he was trying that with Overeem, and Overeem was like, I don't think so, you need to stand up.
Unexpected.
The other good fight for that night was Josh Barnett and Brett Rogers. And I'm not a fan of Josh Barnett, but I have to hand it to him. He managed to win completely clean, too.
Yeah.
I don't like that he's all pro wrestler and the way he acts and everything, but he did a good job.
Yeah, that was kind of funny the way he just took the mic away from the guy. It was like, yeah, I'm going to run this show. I don't think that was planned with Joe Rogan.
Well, that stuff's not going to fly if he ever actually gets to fight in the UFC again, which, who knows. But if he does, that's not going to fly, because you saw how quickly they squashed that with Lesnar. They didn't let that happen.
Right.
That's not how Zuffo wants the UFC to be represented.
Right. But at the same time, I mean, Lesnar's rant was a little more volatile.
Yeah. that was lame. But
back about the sponsors and everything.
Yeah, but the whole idea of just, you know, that whole WWE attitude, I don't think that that's going to fly at all. And I don't think that they'll even let that happen with Josh Barnett. And especially... I don't think Dana White likes him.
Yeah. Well, I was surprised more than anything about was the fact that they still allowed Frank Shamrock on the commentator team.
But for how long? I mean, he's still under his Strikeforce contract, so for how long?
Right. Well, I think what they've been most concerned about is Showtime, because apparently Showtime signed all these deals. So until the Showtime contract runs out, Right.
But, you know, I don't think Dana White likes any of the Shamrocks, and you won't see too many. In fact, you probably won't see any current Ken Shamrock fighters in the UFC. And it's, you know, it's a shame for them, because, you know, he's got a lot of good fighters. He's got a lot of, they're young, they're hungry, but Dana White doesn't like Ken Shamrock, so. So don't. So you see a lot of Kim-Tamrock fighters going somewhere else to get training so that one day they can be on the UFC.
Right. So what do you think about these matchups here on UFC Live 4? Of course, we got
This is an awesome card. It's an awesome card. And you know, even the article that I sent to you doesn't have all of the fights on it that are going to be good. I mean, almost every fight on here is going to be good. And I was kind of looking back at some of the stuff that I didn't write about, and I was noticing, like, Matt Brown, for instance, he is fighting John Howard. And John Howard's almost got nothing to lose. If he loses to Matt Brown, well, you know, there's always tomorrow, you know. But Matt Brown has got 3 losses right now in a row, and he needs to fight. So he's going to be super hungry. He's a good fighter, but, man, John Howard is such a strong, powerful striker. I have a feeling that if Matt Brown is lucky, he might get a second chance in Strikeforce before it becomes absorbed by the UFC. Maybe, if he's lucky.
This card actually has a big Boston flavor to it, too. It's John Howard's from Boston. I actually met him in person a couple times, and we had him on the show, Tony and I did, a while back. But he's had a couple tough losses that he wants to get over and put in the past. So I think Matt Brown is the perfect guy to give him that chance to do that. And Matt Brown has the X factor of knowing that if he loses this fight, he's probably going to get thrown out of the UFC. So it should be interesting.
It's going to be a war, I think. Because, I mean, Matt Brown, he's a good fighter. He's a good striker. He's a decent striker. He's got very good jiu-jitsu. And I think that if he can get John Howard on the ground, he's got this one. But I don't know if he's going to be able to get John Howard on the ground, because John Howard has pretty good takedown defense, and he's just a strong, crazy, freaky strong striker. So I don't know.
All right. The other guy from Boston that I know, I met personally, Christian Moorcraft, is fighting Matt Mitrione. That's definitely going to be a good fight. I know Moorcraft had a tough time against Stefan Struve there.
Yeah, he's 1-1 in the UFC right now, I think. And Mitrione is 4-0 in the UFC. Mitrione is a whiner, which makes him unlikable, but he's a good fighter. But I think Moorcraft is probably going to get this one.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning towards him because he's from the New England area, but also
wow.
He's a lot
up on clam powder that makes him strong.
He's a lot bigger as far as shapely, bigger guy. He's a solid puncher. Mitrione really has one big right hand that favors him. But then again, he improved so much between the show and his first couple fights in the UFC.
He did, but an important thing to note is that even though Moorcraft has had only, 2 fights so far in the UFC, he's had really strong competition. Mitrione has had kind of mediocre competition. They're okay, and they're good wins, but they're not the same. It's not Stefan Struve, you know what I mean?
Right. And then a couple other fights with Boston guys. Joe Lauzon.
I like him.
Kurt Warburton. He's an interesting character. Actually had an article that I read about him the other day about how he really helped introduce the UFC to social networking. So he's got something like 30,000 Twitter followers.
Is that Lauzon or Warburton?
Lauzon.
He's a computer nerd anyway.
Right, yeah. He graduated with a degree in computer information systems or something like that. And he actually ran a website called Mass MMA for years, but then he got so involved in his career, he kind of let it go to crap. But it's still out there. It's just all outdated stuff on there now, I think.
Right.
Kurt Warburton, I really don't know much about him, and I don't expect much from him against a guy like Lauzon, but Lauzon's been kind of up and down over his last few years, so I don't know which guy's going to show up.
Yeah, so I think his confidence is up now. I mean, he had, who was the guy, Gabe Rudiger, watched his win over Gabe Rudiger, which was, you know, more of a just like something fun for everybody to watch because there was no way Gabe Rudiger was going to win that. So, but all I can remember about Gabe Rudiger is The Ultimate Fighter, and he's laying on the floor going, "Just drag me back in."
Yeah,
he
couldn't cut the whip.
Like, yeah.
That's what surprised me so much about the fact that they brought him back into the fold. They let him go after that show because he wouldn't fight. He wouldn't lose the last pound that he had to go.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I think he
started winning in these other, so they brought him back. Yeah, I think he had one good fight and then Brandon Joe was on.
I think Dana White will bring him back just for the entertainment factor of somebody, you know, eating him because he doesn't have a heart for it, I don't think. Maybe he did at one time, but I don't think he does anymore.
And another Massachusetts guy, I'm not sure if he's from Massachusetts or he just ended up there, but I actually ran into this guy, Rich Attenito, at a show out in Worcester put on by Butterbean. And I actually messed up when I saw him. I called him Rich Clementi. So he corrected me, and he had the unfortunate experience of getting his hand busted on The Ultimate Fighter. But then he got into the UFC, even though he didn't win the show, he stuck around, and he's training up in, last time I checked, and when I saw him back in 2010, I think, last year, he was training with the folks at Kenny Florian used to train with Sitio Dong there in Boston. So, hopefully, I think he's still training there. He's fighting Daniel Roberts. I've seen him fight, I think, a couple times, but I don't know all that much about, so I don't know what to expect there. He's 12. His last fight, Daniel Roberts lost to Claude Patrick in his last fight at UFC 129. Well, I also never heard of him.
Who cares?
And he's also got lost to John Howard, who's also on the same card.
John Howard, man. That's going to be an interesting fight. That's going to be a war. That's actually going to be one. I should have put that in my article because that's actually going to be a very good fight. That could end up easily being fight of the night.
Right. Yeah, Howard's had a couple tough losses against really good competitors, you know, and I kind of think just because he had a little bit of a win streak going when he first started in the UFC, they felt like he was ready for those guys, and maybe it's just going to take him another few fights to be back in position to rematch those guys, like Jake Ellenberger and Thiago Alves, were the last two guys he fought.
Well, if he beats Matt Brown, at least he can say that that's good competition, because Matt Brown is no joke, so That would be a good win for him. If he loses, it's not going to be as devastating for him as it would be if Matt Brown lost.
And, of course, it's a main event, Nick Marquardt, that's a great story. What do you think about that one?
I'm looking forward to that one. Actually, Rick Story, to me, looks like a farm boy. I mean, he looks like he should be throwing bales of hay or something. He just looks like a big old farm boy. But he's a farm boy that will kick your ass. So he's good. He's really good. I don't know if he's Marquardt good yet, but he might be. So and he's the one that's got everything to gain from this fight. If he loses, well, he lost a good competition to, you know, somebody that was already everybody thinks he's going to win. So Rick Story has nothing to lose. Marquardt has everything to lose. Because if he, you know, he's trying to get himself back in contention for the title, and if he loses, he's going to drop far. And if he wins, then good. He's back on a winning streak.
Right. Yeah, I'm interested in seeing how it goes, too. I thought that was kind of funny. I read earlier this week that Versus and Spike TV are going to have a little family feud there. Because Versus is obviously putting on this whole card for free on site.
Right.
And Spike TV decided they were going to do a 10-hour Nate Marquardt marathon. so the story headline was Marquardt versus Marquardt. So they're going to show like all of his fights in this marathon that's actually going to be running at the same time as the UFC Live 4.
And you know what's going to happen? People are going to watch Spike TV, and then the fight's going to start, and then they're going to switch over to Versus. So either way, the UFC wins. And then all the preliminary fights are going to be on Facebook somewhere.
Right.
So, I mean, the UFC just wins altogether. You know, they're the ones that are going to get all the ratings no matter what, because if nobody wants to watch the fight and they just want to watch highlight reels of Nate Marquardt, then super. And if they want to watch the fight, super. You know, they're going to win either way. I'm interested. The fight that I'm really interested in that I didn't actually include in my article because probably nobody but me cares as much about it, but the Chick Congo and Pat Barry fight, I'm very interested in this one because Pat Barry is kind of a lunatic, and Chick Congo looks like he should be a championship fighter, and he's not. He's kind of awful, actually.
Yeah. They both had, experience with fights that they should have won, and they just look like crap in. Like
exactly.
Pat Barrett, probably the best example was when he fought his idol there, Mirko Krokop, and they kept hugging in the middle of the fight.
And in that kind of situation, it's like, remember when you and I, we interviewed Ash Bowman a couple of years ago, and he was going to fight Josh Thompson, and he was so excited. He was fighting Josh Thompson, and he was like, I don't even care if I win. I'm just glad to be here, you know? And I think that's kind of what Pat Barry was feeling when he fought Krokop, because he was just glad to be there. He was just glad he was fighting this person that he really looks up to, and he lost before he ever walked in the cage.
But he was kicking his ass up until, I think, the final round, and he just let it go. He got injured himself, I think. He broke his hand and his foot, and he ended up losing the fight. But in the early going, he was actually winning, but it seemed like he just felt bad for him.
Right.
And Chuck Congo, he is, like, the most physical, looking fighter that you could ever lay eyes on. Like, head to toe, sculpted. And he sucks. Like, really,
and that's part of his problem, too.
It surprised me that they kept him around so long.
I think for the UFC, he's kind of like Joe Daddy Stevenson. He's kind of a gatekeeper. If you can get past Chick Congo, great, you're in. If you can't beat Chick Congo, you have no business in this industry.
His last fight was a draw against Travis Brown at UFC 120 back in October of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And off the top of my head, I don't remember that fight, but he had back-to-back losses to Velasquez and Frank Mir in 2009, and then he lost a win against Paul Buontello.
Okay, let me talk about Paul Buontello for just a minute. This fight's actually a funny scene, because Paul Buontello tapped out, and I can't be talking bad about Paul Buontello because I have family that actually they're finally supporting him, but Paul Buontello tapped out to Chick Congo because Chick Congo was punching him in the thigh.
That's weird.
So, needless to say, Paul Buontello doesn't have an immediate future in the UFC.
Yeah, he was one of those guys that was in Elite XC there for a little while, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
First time I saw him.
And he did. He was doing pretty good. And if I'm not mistaken, at one time, he was Chuck Liddell's houseboy. Chuck Liddell was training him for free, but in order to do that, he had to basically be the houseboy for Chuck Liddell. He had to, you know, feed Chuck's kids and clean up after them and, you know, keep the house. He was basically Chuck Liddell's wife without benefits. So.
That's funny. Yeah, so that fight should be interesting. I don't know if we're going to see whoever loses get thrown out, but it's definitely going to be one of those.
I honestly see Barry taking that fight.
Fingo's toss-up fights, I think.
Now, what do you feel about, speaking of Joe Daddy Stevenson, how do you feel about Stevenson versus Vasquez?
I don't really know much about Vasquez. But Stevenson has been around for a long time, and he has a lot of experience that should help him out in this fight.
He does. He has a lot of experience, but he has. I think that sometimes his mind is not where it should be. I think that after that really bloody loss to BJ Penn, I think that his confidence got really, really shaken.
No wonder I don't know anything about Javier Vasquez. He's 0-0-0, according to Sherdog.
No.
That can't be possible.
No, he's 15-5-0.
Okay. Sherdog.
And I think he has six fights in the UFC, actually.
Okay.
He has a win over Jens Pulver. No, I take it back. He's got fights in the WEC, not the UFC.
Oh, okay. That's probably why I don't know. Because I never watched, before the merger, I never watched any of the WEC guys, unless it was Jose Aldo.
Well, he's 2-3 in the WEC, and I mean, he's got a win on Jens Pulver, but Jens Pulver, you know, he's well past the point of retirement. Just his body is just so broke down. He just can't do it anymore. He needs to be coaching, teaching people what he knew, and not trying to compete anymore, because he just can't. And then he has a win over Mackens Schmerzer. I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Merzier.
Yeah, that guy. Who's okay. He's a good fighter, so that's a pretty good win. But then, you know, he's not a consistent winner. So I think what this really is kind of a tomato can fight for Joe Daddy Stevenson to get him back in the game, to get his confidence up. You know, because I think for a while now, I think that he was the official gatekeeper, and you know, he's got so many losses on his record, especially recent. You know, his most recent fights ended in losses, and normally that would be the end of somebody's career. Three losses in a row and you're gone. But they're keeping him around because he's a good test for fighters coming up. So I don't know if he's a test for Javier Vasquez or if Javier Vasquez is the tomato can for him. And I'm thinking it's the tomato can scenario.
Yeah, I just wish they had done that with Chuck Liddell before he retires. It seems to throw him to the lions all of a sudden. Although somebody said at one point when I kept mentioning that back then that Chuck Liddell probably wouldn't take a fight unless it was competitive.
I think that's true. I think that's true because, I mean, he knows if he's getting, you know, a bad competition, if he's getting weak competition. And if you're going to lose, you want to lose for real. You don't want to, and you definitely don't want to take the risk of losing to somebody who's not worth losing to.
Right. Another fight on this card we've yet to mention, Tyson Griffin versus Manny Gamburian.
I didn't mention that one. I thought I did.
Well, you mentioned it in your article. We just haven't mentioned it.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be a really good fight, but Manny Gamburian, I suspect, is going to win that just because he's brutal. He's crazy. There's something wrong with him. I mean, he's cousins with, who's he cousins with? Another crazy man who's Armenian. I can't think of his name right now. But they're crazy. I think all Armenians are crazy if they're professional fighters.
Oh, we're going to get hate mail now.
I know. I'm talking about fighters, talking about not Armenians in general. But Manny Gamburian, I mean, when you saw him on Ultimate Fighter.
Oh, there's our 90-second warning. Better wrap it up.
90-second warning, Rich.
So when he was on the Ultimate Fighter, he was, you know, he had a level head and everything and stopped these crazy fights that were going on in the house. And then whenever he's in the cage, he wants to kill you. So I don't know that type of description has
that. Is on the cusp, too. I read a couple articles that said if he loses this fight, he'll probably get thrown out. And rounding out the card, just to finish up, we got Michael Johnson versus Edward Faloto. Never heard of him.
Never heard of either one of them.
And let's see, who else? Charles Oliveira versus Nick Lentz and Matt Grice versus Ricardo Lamas.
On the Oliveira fight, I'm going to go with Charles Oliveira. Because he's from Houston. I'm from Houston. There you go.
Yeah. And I don't know if I can get through it before the show ends, but we got Strike Force Challenges tomorrow night. James Terry versus Carlos Fedor. Gian Vellante versus Lawrence Larkin. Jermaine Durandami versus Julia Budd. Ryan Couture versus Matt Ricehouse. Jason High versus Quinn Mulhern. Keith Perry versus Trevor Smith. Derek Brunson versus Jeremy Hamilton. Eduardo Pamplona versus Jaron Peebles. And Sterling Ford versus Charon Spain. And that's all, folks. Signing off. Thanks a lot, Holly, for stopping by.
Thank you.
Nathan signing out.
See you next week.